Early returns. That's the Nothing Personal word of the day. It is Monday, April 1st, 2024. It is April Fool's Day. It is Easter Monday. But of course, we are here live on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. What a weekend. I spent yesterday doing an Easter egg hunt. I have no idea why I did that. Easter egg hunts to me are a little, and I've never done one. I don't understand the concept. I guess you just look for eggs, and there was an adult one, there was a child one, and there's gifts, and there's money, and there's drinking, and there's food. I don't really understand the concept because there were a bunch of kids around, and I did an informal poll, and I do this, I'm Jewish, so I do this around Hanukkah. I always would ask my kids, hey, what's Hanukkah? And the answer was, it's about presents. Well, that's not exactly right. Though, as a consequential, that's what it is. What's the Easter egg hunt? What's Easter? And nobody knew. The resurrection, or a lot of stuff happened with Jesus this weekend. I'm not a Jesus guy. It's not that I'm anti-Jesus. It's just not my thing. But I do understand that holidays have just become an excuse to either not work, to party, or for the compulsory gift giving. Well, there were a lot of gifts this weekend. Segway alert. I want to talk about what's going on in college basketball. I can't wait to talk about the women's tournament. I'm counting down the minutes. We are 11 hours away from LSU and Iowa taking the court. But that wasn't even the biggest story of the women's tournament. The NCAA men's tournament, we're in the Final Four. Raise your hand if you had North Carolina State and Alabama in your Final Four, and I will show you a liar. Although, of course, someone is going to show me a bracket with it. But the baseball season started this weekend, and there's a couple things we have to go through. This is the time of year. First four games of the season, three games of the season. Teams, few teams are winless. Few teams are undefeated. People are making mass generalizations about their season. And there's no greater example of this than in New York. And in New York, my favorite city in the U.S., it is all about people telling you things to the extreme. So the Mets get swept by the Brewers, and that's it. The David Stearns era is off to a terrible start. And then they give you the stats. Worst start since 2014. What does this mean for the way the Mets are constructed, the decisions they've made, as though an entire process is torn apart by these losses? I totally love doing the math on this. So remember, in baseball, the way we do it is 162 games. I know there's 17 games in football, but I'd prefer you to just assume there's 16 games in football, because then I can say it's 10 baseball games per one football game. So after you've played four games, which is what the Astros have done, their 0-4, the Yankees have done their 4-0, the Mets have done three games only. So they're 30% done with one game, which means they're in the first 4 minutes of the second quarter of the first game of the NFL season. So I want you to just think to yourself that you love your team in football. You're waiting forever for game one of the NFL season. And they're down like 17-0 with 10 minutes left in the second quarter. And you decide to say, that's it. The season's over. It's so preposterous when you think of it in those terms. But here we are. So the Marlins lose four in a row at home. Losing four in a row at home the way the Astros did. I told you how upset I would be losing opening day. When you go through your schedule and you see that you're opening at home against Pittsburgh, it doesn't even occur to you that you're going to get swept. It's not even part of the, oh, if X, then Y. I think the Astros probably didn't assume they get swept by the Yankees. I can't imagine the Yankees, when you go into a road series, the rule is you split on the road and you play 600 to 700 ball at home and you're a playoff team. 500 on the road, .600 to .700 at home, and you are one of the best teams in baseball. When you're on the road on a series basis, obviously you try to win 2 out of 3, most of 3-game series. In a 4-game series, you're looking for a split. You win the first 2 games, then it's gravy. Try to get one of the last 2 to win 3 out of 4. You win the first 3, and you say, hey, it doesn't really matter what happens. We win 3 out of 4, an amazing start to the season. And if you're on the home side, you have to say, hey, we got to salvage. That's the word for it. Salvage one. Juan Soto made it so that it would be no salvaging. And New Yorkers, my favorite people of great hyperbole, we got to sign Soto. He's the MVP. We're going to bring him back. Soto and the Yankees, a match made in heaven. He's meant to be Yankee. He's the anti Jordan Montgomery or Carl Pavano, or pick any player you want who didn't succeed with the Yankees. And so you get to say that Juan Soto was meant, I read this somewhere, he was meant to be in pinstripes. Yes, he had a great, great 4 games. There's no question. And he gave a funny quote. That's the kind of start I wanted. That tells you a lot about Juan Soto and his choice of agents. Normally, you'd want to talk about your team. Great way. No, I grinded really hard this offseason and in spring training to be successful in the beginning of the season. I'm not saying that Juan Soto is the reason the Padres had issues last year. I'm not saying he's not. I'm not saying Juan Soto isn't one of the best players in baseball. I'm not saying he is. He's really, really good. I am saying he showed that with his glove and with his bat, that he can impact games, assuming he's up in positions where the impact can happen, where in baseball, that's sort of only a 33% chance toward the end of the game. I love that the former Marlin, John Birdie, got some love for that great stab he made at third base. Here's my advice to Yankee fans before we move on. I've got one little tiny little nugget. Try to just be even keeled if you can. And I don't want to take the fun away from being a baseball fan or a sports fan or the emotion you feel. And I love the fact that if you're willing to feel great, you recognize that you're going to feel crappy. Except when people feel crappy about their team being 0-4, they view that, they take it so personally. And it's such a hard thing to feel. You feel like there's a cloud over you. Just a little more even keeled. Another takeaway I had this weekend, Mookie Betts at the top of that Dodgers lineup, he's so good. I wonder whether the Red Sox look at Mookie Betts in the front office says, oh, maybe we shouldn't have gone with Devers. No, I don't think they say that. I really don't. I think they say, wow, Alex is so good. I don't think they do that either. He's a Yankee, actually. So Betts, I'd say the MVP of the weekend. I could have gone with Soto. I think I'm going to go with Betts. Betts showing power, plate discipline on a team that, while they're not off to an undefeated start, you just look at the top of their lineup with Ohtani, and it doesn't matter what time of game it is. They came back against the Cardinals late in the game last night to win 3 out of 4. Another thing that baseball fans get wrong that maybe this year you'll start getting right or thinking about it differently. When you're losing games going into the seventh inning, the way players look at it, they have a third of a game left. They have 9 outs of the 27. That's a full 33%. So they don't panic the way that fans do when they're losing. Oh, it's over. We're down 5 runs in the first inning. We're the Pittsburgh Pirates going for the sweep. We're never going to win the game. Oh, we won the game. But the last 2 things of this weekend are far more interesting, and I want to spend a few minutes on them, please. We don't talk much about the Anaheim Angels now that Ohtani's gone. Sometimes we talk about Artie Moreno, some of the things that have happened with the Angels. Mike Trout still there with his bend of merry incompetence around him. Ron Washington, who by all accounts was deserving of another chance to manage, super excited to have the opportunity to manage the Angels. This is his first year. The Angels are playing the Orioles in Camden Yards. Two games in, the Orioles win two games. They win them convincingly. And Ron Washington called a team meeting. I was a part of an organization where team meetings were called more often than maybe I would have preferred. I don't mind players calling players-only meetings. I like when managers, every once in a while before the season starts, for sure, maybe right toward the end of the season, right after the All-Star break. Team meetings are something that have to be strategic, and you have to do them at exactly the right time, because if you don't, you risk losing your clubhouse. You risk losing credibility. The Angels lose two games. Ron Washington calls a team meeting and then says, basically, I wanted to make sure that we didn't get off track. We prepared during spring training. We prepared for a 162-game season. We had a plan in place. Forget the fact that we're bad and that we're very likely to lose 90 games with one of the top five players in baseball. Forget all that. We need a meeting to make sure everyone's focused. I want to bring you inside a player's mind when a manager calls a team meeting after two games. They're sitting in their locker, may have just gotten out of the shower. The way a team meeting works after a loss, if we know that the GM wants to meet the team, the GM will go to the clubhouse early. We would always go down, mostly always in the ninth inning, so we'd be there and ready. I would go earlier if a player or was hurt or if a manager got ejected. But generally, I'm watching the game and I'd come down in the ninth just to be ready for a player move or anything that had to happen post-game, just so I could be in position. If you want to have a team meeting as an executive, you go down early, you tell the clubby puts a notice on the board and gets notice to the bench coach that there's going to be a meeting after the game. And so the players can be told, because you don't, some players run to the shower immediately, some go to the food room immediately. They each have their post-game routine. Some players go to the weight room. Some players go to the cages. Some players go to the video room. They spread out throughout the clubhouse. So if you want an immediate team meeting, you have to let the players know immediately. So you go down and you let it be known. If the manager wants to do a team meeting, the manager would not communicate that to the front office until he comes back into his office after the game. We'd be there waiting for him, and the manager would say, hey, I want to meet the team. And I would say, why? Like, what's the object of the meeting? What are we trying to communicate? Are we trying to talk about discipline? Are there people violating team rules? Is there something going on? Are there personal issues between some players? Was there a fight in the dugout? Were there missed signs? What's the object of the meeting? And in this case, Ron Washington would have said, hey, the object of the meeting is, I don't want anyone to panic. And one of my great favorite movie lines from The American President is when the president says, see, I think what we should do is actually not panic. There's no reason, there's no object of that team meeting, so I wouldn't have had it. And while Ron Washington is a veteran manager who I would want to defer to in many instances, he's got his pulse on the clubhouse more than the front office. I would have tried absolutely vehemently to convince him not to do this sort of team meeting. But he did. What about Oakland? How are things in Oakland? Everyone happy? MLB, you happy? For all the people watching this show, fans of Nothing Personal, did you think I was going to go a opening weekend story without talking about Oakland? And my Oakland story is not about their attendance. Don't care. It's not that I don't care. That sounds harsh. Having 13,000 people opening day, not ideal. Having 3,800 people game two, I've seen it. Total attendance of, what was it, like 26,000, 27,000 people in the first four games. that's not even the biggest story. The biggest story is that what baseball has to be doing with Oakland, forget John Fisher and his attempt to even possibly potentially reclaim any semblance of, hey, I know what I'm doing. Forget Dave Cavill trying to reclaim any semblance of, hey, we've got this under control. They need to find a place to play before their stadium in Vegas opens, if it ever opens. There are rumors that they're going to play in Sacramento. That is where I think they will play in the interim period. In order to get a deal in Sacramento, they have to renegotiate with their TV partner. They have to cut a deal with the River Cats. They have to figure out the logistics. The union has to get involved to make sure it's a major league ready facility. And what that is code for, not for fans. It doesn't mean that fans have to have the right number of concession stands or there has to be good ingress and egress. When we say major league ready, all that means is player facilities behind the scenes that you don't see as fans. It means the weight room, the food room, how the players get to the clubhouse, et cetera, how they get to the bullpen, all the things, the creature comforts that Tony Clark loves to make sure the players get. So word came out this weekend that Oakland and the Oakland A's are going to have a meeting. And that's not that newsworthy because they've already met once or twice and we covered it on this show, where what we said was that the city of Oakland is trying to make a deal that keeps the A's there during this interim period in the broken down, crappy Coliseum. And the city of Oakland had some rules. One, we want an expansion team. Never going to be guaranteed. No chance, throw the pants. Two, we want to keep the name A's here in Oakland. Not going to happen. There's no way that baseball would ever give that in a contract. But they had a meeting and they came out of the first meeting and they said, oh, we agreed to have another meeting. That's my favorite kind of meeting, where you sit down in a meeting and you get all ready. You put on your Sunday best. You play Our House by Madness as you're going to the meeting. And you sit down in the meeting and you say, hi, my name's David Sampson. And I would like to have another meeting. That's great. Thank you. I'm really glad that we had this time together so we could establish the fact that we're going to meet again. Yeah, we had a few platitudes. Good to see you again. Hey, sorry about all that PR. Sorry that I haven't been very respectful toward you. Sorry that you've been ignoring me. I will not be ignored. Hey, can we meet again? So they have a third meeting coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, April 2nd. And this is a good one because Oakland leaked out what is going to happen during the meeting. They're offering an extension. ESPN got a notification or got the actual document of what the city of Oakland is offering the Oakland A's. Now, listen to me now and hear me later. The offer that's being made to the Oakland A's has as much chance of being accepted by the Oakland A's as I do of being a lottery pick in this year's NBA draft. I don't want to say it's zero, but it's as close to zero as you can get without being zero. I mean, I'm eligible. Could happen. Could start on HGH right now and end up like 5'8 by lottery time. I could all of a sudden learn how to dunk or something. Here's what it is. You ready? They are asking the city of Oakland for the Oakland A's to pay $97 million. Let that marinate for just one quick second, if you don't mind. $97 million as a rent payment during the course of the lease. But the good news is, they're offering them a 5-year extension because, correctly so, they've evaluated that it is highly unlikely that there will be a new stadium in Vegas by 28. Highly unlikely. So we don't have to do this again. We'll give you a 5-year extension. But don't worry, we'll do a Boras-like opt-out after 3 years just in case you get the building built when you think it's going to be built. But the rent you have to pay is the same. Whether you're there 3 years or 5 years, you got to pay the $97 million. The A's don't even get $33 million in gate revenue. Forget paying that in rent, but I digress. And the worst part is that Oakland came up with the $97 million the way I come up with attendance. That it's funny to me, no one's going to figure it out, except they did it in a way that everybody was able to figure it out. The $97 million is the same number, not coincidentally, that was the shortfall that John Fisher said is too big a bridge to gap to do a deal in Oakland for a new ballpark at the Howard Terminal. There was a $97 million gap. It does make me feel like John Fisher had no interest in doing anything in Oakland, because a $97 million gap over the course of a 30-year lease, a 38-year lease, you can go out, you could ask the city to bond that. That's what we did to get the deal done in Miami. We had a gap. We agreed to cover the gap if they would agree to float the bonds, and we'd pay them rent in order to pay the interest on the bonds. There are ways to solve a gap in a billion-dollar project of $97 million. It is hardly worth being a deal breaker. But now Oakland is doing a little up yours to the A's by charging them this $97 million. Baseball will not let them sign a lease for $97 million. That's for sure. But then there's even more to it than just the $97 million. They've got a few demands in there. It's like a menu. They're going to go sit in the meeting and they're going to say, we want $97 million and we want to be make sure that we're considered to be an expansion team, which is something that the contracting party has no power over. It would be like me getting into a contract with Levitard and as part of that contract, having him make sure that I was able to, boy, this would have been, we're live. We have no prompter. I'm trying to think exactly how to explain it, how ridiculous it is to ask something that you can't give. It would be like me asking Levitard as part of a contract with Levitard to guarantee that I can be friends with Bruce Springsteen. Wait, there's nothing he can do about that. Introduce us, it won't make us friends. The Oakland A's can suggest to baseball that they consider Oakland as an extension city, as a 4, 8, 69. They can suggest to baseball, hey, will you consider Oakland as an expansion city? But they can't make it happen. The whole thing is preposterous. It's such a blight on baseball that it's one of the big stories. They've just got to announce Sacramento, say this is it for Oakland. It doesn't matter that we're going to draw 5,000 people a game. I hope that's not the case, because I still think the deal in Vegas is absolutely not going to come together the way people think. But this is like dying by a thousand cuts. So maybe we should just focus on on-field stuff. Go Mets! Well, who had it in the bracket? Did you have NC State? An 11 seed. Nobody below an 11 seed's ever been to the Final Four. If you don't care about college basketball, care about this. I had a debate on Friday's sporting class with John Skipper and Pablo Torre. And my position was that we all like Cinderellas. And his position, John's position, is that people like rooting for Cinderellas, but they like watching the, well, I don't remember what he called it, the tried and true, the big blood, the big blue. It was some North Carolina reference, I assume. But it was something about how we'd all, blue blood. Thank you, Coca. I was thinking Tom Selleck, actually. So that's exactly funny. Why was I thinking about Tom Selleck? I think he has a new book coming out. I don't remember why. Do you know why I didn't shave today, Coca? Did I tell you this? I always shave. You can tell what day, if nothing personal it is, by looking at the hair growth during the course of a week, because I always shave for Monday's show. But we have a live show tomorrow night in Philadelphia, so I figured I want to shave Tuesday for when we do the live show at City Winery. If you're in Philadelphia listening to this, come out and watch us. You're going to meet Coca. You're going to see Sarah. We're all going to be there. We're going to do a show at City Winery at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow as the first stop of our live tour. Information is on the City Winery website. It's on davidsamsonpodcast.com website. I wonder what we're going to talk about during the Philadelphia show. Could it be the Sixers? Could it be Jason Kelsey? What about the Phillies? Never know. So my position was that I like the Cinderella story and I like watching them and I like rooting for them all the way through. North Carolina State, they're there in this tournament because they did something incredible. They had to win 5 games in 5 days. They won the tournament, the ACC tournament. That's the only reason they got a bid. They were a mediocre team all year, an 11 seed in a 4-bracket 64-team tournament means you're ranked, let's just say, somewhere between 44 and 48. That's the math of it. And they get to play the number one seed, Purdue. They beat Duke. You think the networks, like John, they were all rooting for Duke? I guess the same way they would have been rooting for Kentucky. So North Carolina State gets to the Final Four. And there's another story in the Final Four that is not being discussed, and it fascinates me. Nick Saban's old team is in the Final Four. Nick Saban was the coach of Alabama, obviously, the football team. And now the basketball team is in the Final Four for the first time ever. And one of the reasons Nick Saban is no longer the coach of Alabama is his upset in that Alabama doesn't have the advantage on the football side that they used to have. Because now, instead of paying everyone under the table and being able to pay more people under the table than others, it's sort of a level playing field of free agency in college sports. The irony of a team in the same school in a different sport that gets no love, has had no success, is the clear, ugly stepchild to the football team, them being in the Final Four. Are they in the Final Four because money's being spread around and that they have the opportunity to have different, better players, or that it's a more level playing field period and that the one and done schools like the Dukes and the Kentuckys never really can form a team? And if you can have a college basketball team full of 28-year-olds who have played together for 9 years, they're not quite doctors, but they're basketball players. Am I the only one who doesn't love the irony of Alabama basketball team being in the Final Four? I absolutely love it. Of course, the NCAA is going to give you the story of UConn. They have a chance to repeat. How exciting that would be. I don't think it's that exciting at all. Although I'm going to watch it. It's next week. The women's games are more interesting to me, and we're going to be able to talk about that. Let's talk about the women's games right now, tonight, 7 o'clock, Iowa, LSU. Iowa's favored by 1.5. Let's actually go right into our nothing personal pick of the day, if you don't mind, Coca. We are 37-43. We had an 0-2 weekend. The Astros did not beat the Yankees. That was a loss on Friday. They didn't beat the Yankees one time this weekend. Saturday, we had a blown save. We had the Reds beating the Nats. The Reds were beating the Nats. Then the Nats beat the Reds. Hunter Green was good. Patrick Corbin stinks. My wait to see about Patrick Corbin absolutely, absolutely stays. He will not make it through the season. So we are 37-43. Let me give you my picks for today so you have them. I am taking Iowa and Caitlin Clark over Angel Reese and LSU. I could spend a lot of time talking about Kim Mulkey. The big Washington Post article came out. Did you read it? Did you feel like she was defamed? Were you shocked and awed that she has a problem with her gay players or with players who are gaining weight? They got a ton of players to comment on the way she coaches, her coaching style, her gruffness, her intensity. You had some players, I love you, some players, I hate you, players on the record. It's an article I would have completely ignored but for her press conference telling me that I've got to watch it, got to read it. She's going to sue with the best defamation attorneys in the country. So I read the entire article. I can't wait for Kim Mulkey to do a press conference telling you that she's suing the Washington Post. I can't wait. I want to meet the lawyer who's going to take the case. There is no billboard Shakespearean lawyer who will sue the Washington Post over that article. Not one. There cannot and will not be a defamation lawsuit. It was an absolute nothing burger. Now, does she seem like a woman who I'd want to hang out with during Easter? Probably not. Los Angeles Times did an accompanying article with her as well. I've never seen this, Coca, have you? Have you seen an article? Now, this is a thing where articles are vetted. Lawyers go through them, looking out for defamation. There's fact checkers. Then an article comes out online. Then it comes out in the printed paper, sometimes not in the printed paper, just online. And the thing about an online article is you can see that it can get updated once it's posted. So it can be posted at 6:42 p.m. and then you can read in the byline updated at 8:32 p.m. The LA Times did this article where, again, Kim Mulkey took the podium to explained to you that the Los Angeles Times article was an absolute disgrace, the way they referred to UCL players, UCLA players and LSU players, dirty debutantes. I'd never heard that expression. Don't exactly know what it means. I'm sorry. Milquetoast. I think they referred to UCLA as milquetoast. And Kim Mulkey said, I will not let you speak about my players this way. The irony of her telling us that she doesn't want anyone to impugn the character or the character traits of her players, right after an article came out that said, basically, she speaks with impunity because it's a Tuesday. And the LA Times then did a quasi-correction saying, oh, this does not meet our editorial standards. What a weird media world we live in right now. We're going to take Iowa 1.5 over LSU, and that'll be the end of Kim Mulkey. I think Caitlin Clark is going to end her career with a title. I think it's the only way to end. I want to give you a baseball pick as well. The Yankees are taking their 4-0 record out for a walk. They're going to play the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are getting 5 units. It's plus 105 versus the Yankees. I'm not saying the Yankees are going to go 162-0, but they're not. We're taking the Diamondbacks. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to review a series I watched. Then I want to get back to the women's NCAA, because while the story should be Caitlin Clark, it should not be Kim, the coach, and her defamation. There was something that happened this weekend in the women's NCAA tournament that is a far bigger story than anything that's happened on court. We'll be right back. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. From what you've seen so far, you think they'll be a first-time winner of the NBA championship? If the Pacers, Clippers, Suns, Magic, Pelicans, or T-Wolves win, you win at plus 650. That's 6 teams to root for, 6 chances to win. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SAMSON. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SAMSON. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369.
In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. We're with you Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. Join us wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to us. Don't forget to tell your friends. And if you happen to be in the neighborhood of Philly tomorrow, I'll see you then. Or if you happen to be in Atlanta on Monday, I'll see you then. You can see right now on the Nothing Personal with David Samson YouTube channel where our live tour stops are. Philly, Atlanta, Boston, Nashville, Pittsburgh, and New York at the end of April. This starts a month of insanity. Coco, I'm supposed to run the London Marathon. It was a New Year's resolution. The London Marathon is 20 days from today, 3 weeks from yesterday. I was supposed to run 20 miles this weekend, and I just couldn't do it because I was preparing for these shows. Now, after this show today, I'm supposed to go run 20 before all the meetings we have this afternoon. I just don't think it's going to happen. All right. I watched One Day, not the movie with Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess, which I loved. I watched the series with Leo Woodall and Ambika Ahmad. It's 8 episodes or 10 or 12. The concept is that people meet in college and then they see each other on a consistent basis, sort of same time next year-esque, and how their lives change and how they end up together or don't end up together, how there's tragedy. Maybe there's no tragedy. Maybe there's love. He's the guy from White Lotus, who you may remember. Here's the thing about time. I can't get more of it. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And in the middle, in between like episodes 4 and 5, I said, what am I doing? So I watched the original movie again because I loved that. And of course, I had to go finish the rest of the episodes. It's getting all this attention on Netflix. And je ne sais pas pourquoi. I don't know why. Watch the movie with Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess. Don't watch the series. That's my review of One Day. Save your day. All right, I got to get back to the women's tournament. I've been thinking about this topic since I read about it during the weekend, and I've tried to remain completely calm. And on this Monday, April 1st, I'm not calm. There was a game that took place in Portland, Oregon. A game between North Carolina State and Texas. It was a Big 8 game. They don't call it that in the women's tournament. Don't ask me why. Don't ask for questions. Don't give me answers. Don't ask me why. The 3-point line was misapplied. Not on both sides of the court, only on one side. I don't know if we have a picture of it, Coca. I forgot to ask that pre-show. It would have been great to show a picture of the ridiculousness of how nobody noticed somehow that the 3-point line on one side of the court was shorter than regulation, and the 3-point side on the other side of the court was regulation. A 3-point line is a very important demarcation on a basketball court. You shoot behind it, you get an extra point. If your foot's touching it, you only get a 2. If you're used to shooting from a certain point and you can shoot from closer in theory, you're going to shoot better, shoot more. The NCAA was notified, they said in a statement, that the 3-point lines on the court are not the same distance. And that court had been wrong not for a minute, not for an hour, not for a game, but for days. I was stunned into silence, which doesn't happen very often, even on a Monday morning with only 12 minutes left in the show. I can look at a baseball field. Let me rewind. when we have a baseball field, we measure everything and we put a hole at the bases. The hole's in the same place every time. And all the grounds crew does before every game is they put the base in the hole. Not that hard. We've all done it. And you know what we do after we put the base in the hole? We measure. Just to do it again. There you go, Coca. Look at that. That picture that you're seeing right now is real. That's not one of these optical illusions or one of these carnival rides, Hall of Mirrors. If you can't tell the difference between the left side and the right side, then it's time to go to Dr. Malashok. If you can see the difference, then you have to wonder who exactly was watching the games on Friday and Saturday. So we put the bases in the hole, then we measure. Do you know what we do with the pitcher's mound? We have a pitcher's mound that can be brought down to make the field flat. Then it can be lifted up to make the mound again. We can build the mound from scratch. We can tear the mound down, whip out the rubber. We can tear the mound down 4, 8, 9, and it is rip out the rubber. I don't know what I said. Give it to a player who got a no-hitter, somebody who had a special accomplishment. We put the pitching rubber back in. We can do it to home plate. Home plate, the heaviest base you've ever felt. Deep, heavy, impossible to lift. I can barely lift a home plate on my own. That is not an opportunity for a short or weak joke. It's very, very heavy. But we then measure. We have special things to make the batter's boxes. Guess what we do when we chalk the batter's boxes? We measure. Then there is someone responsible to look at the field and say, ah, we put the base in backwards. Oh, that doesn't look right. Let's look at it again. Because if you go up in the press box of a baseball facility, you can see the entire diamond. That basketball court in Portland, you're telling me that nobody noticed it? No player, no coach, no scout, no fan. If I'm a fan and I'm looking down and I see, wow, there's no second base right now. I'm going to say, hey, customer service. Oh, do you need help with your seat? No, we're missing second base. And the customer service person would get on the walkie-talkie, call the boss, who'd call the boss, who'd call the boss, who'd scurry over to the head of operations and say, hey, there's no second base down. The equivalent in baseball would be, hey, there's no foul line. The three-point line was wrong. And it was obviously wrong. We don't mean by like an inch. And then the NCAA compounded the problem. And they said, you know what we're going to do? Let's talk to the coaches. Let's get Wes Moore and Vic Schaefer in here. And we're going to tell them what happened. And you know what? They said, no problem. We'll play. It's even. We each play one half on that side of the court. What? Does that mean that managers of a baseball team can say, you know what? 60 feet, 6 inches? Nah, let's go 60 feet, 3 inches. Let's just try it out. No problem. It's the same. We each have to pitch. 90 feet? Don't be ridiculous. Let's go 69 feet and just see what happens. It'll be the same. Now, we used to do things to change the field to our advantage, totally legal. We would keep the infield grass right around the pitcher's mound higher because then bunts would stop and Juan Pierre could get bunt base hits. We didn't want fast infields necessarily. Ichiro would have us cut the grass a certain way when he was playing in the outfield because he liked the way the ground balls would get to him. No problem. Totally legal. All within the bounds of how to prepare your stadium for baseball. Do you know what we can't screw around with? Distances. Try as we may. There was a Hall of Famer, but quite the manager, Frank Robinson. He managed the Expos after we left Montreal in that franchise swap for Florida. And he would always ask for our bullpen to be measured at Pro Player Stadium. And we would just wait for it. And we would get furious with him for doing it because he thought that somehow we were doing things to our advantage that we'd want the mound higher because we had taller pitchers, John Rausch notwithstanding, and that we would do something that would only accrue to our benefit because of our personnel. What if NC State had better shooters, but not three-point shooters? They had better two-point shooters. So if the line is closer, that means that they're going to get credit for 3 points when in fact the range would be 2 points. Just explain that to me. Explain how the coaches have the authority to say, let's play. Completely absurd. But don't worry. They're going to fix it. Thank God for that. Schaefer had a good quote about this, the coach. At the end of the day, we had already played a game on it. We both won, so we just decided to play. Nope. I'm embarrassed for women's basketball. I'm embarrassed for the NCAA. A-Rod's not going to go down quietly, is he? Alex Rodriguez is on some kind of PR campaign right now. Go back and listen to last week's episodes. We did a bunch of things about the Minnesota Timberwolves and how Glenn Taylor, the owner of the Timberwolves, has now said they're not for sale. And A-Rod and Mark Laurie, who were buying the Timberwolves and who already own 40% of the Timberwolves, have not closed on the remaining 40%. They did not get the control piece. They are not the majority or control owners, board of governors of the Timberwolves. There has been a PR campaign, the likes of which Adam Silver hasn't seen. There's a lot of owner v. owner arguing. There's a bunch of limited partners who can't stand their general partner. There's a bunch of fighting that goes on in ownership groups. There's a bunch of lawsuits that happen between families, sons suing mothers, brothers suing brothers. All sorts of bad stuff goes on when money's involved. All sorts of bad stuff goes on with sports ownership. But this one is the number one of all time. And I don't say that with any hyperbole. A-Rod and Mark Laurie have decided that they are so hurt and sad by not getting the Timberwolves. They feel so scorned that they said, here's our plan. We're going to go public and tell everyone what a piece of dung Glenn Taylor is. We're going to tell stories about what he's doing to us right now, not letting us walk backstage at the Target Center, not letting them speak to the basketball operations people. Here's a newsflash. Limited partners don't have access like that, nor should they. Not exactly newsworthy, but A-Rod used to have it. Now A-Rod doesn't. So what they've done is they've said, we're going to go public and we're going to air every bit of dirty laundry, which means that now investigative journalists are going out and finding out more stuff. For example, A-Rod was the one who was supposed to come up with the last big payment and didn't. They needed like $520 million to close by March 27th. And Mark Laurie, who really was the money person because A-Rod is not, said, you know what? I'm good here. Alex, you do the rest. And Alex couldn't do it. So the report from the Post was that there's a problem between Laurie and A-Rod. But then they came out together in concert. And their main focus was on making sure that we knew that they're not stopping until they get the team. Mark Laurie said, we will use every ounce of effort to enforce the contract that Glenn broke. If that means time, capital, whatever means necessary. We thought we were on good terms and we had a good relationship and they were happy with all the time that we've put into the team to help get the team to where it is today. Thank God now we know why the Timberwolves are in the race for the best record in the Western Conference. It's because of the minority partners, limited partners, A-Rod and Mark Laurie. Totally fine. Glenn Taylor then had to come out and give his own statement saying if they would have had the money on the 27th of March, the deal would have been done and they would have had control, but they didn't. So this back and forth that you're seeing it's only starting. Because A-Rod has said that we could be in this fight for 5 years, 10 years, whatever. We're not going to let go. Spoken like a man who doesn't like funding his own legal bills. This legal fight will not go on for 5 years or 10 years. As a matter of fact, I am so positive that I'll give you a wait to see, an official wait to see, Coca, that the fight between A-Rod Lurie and Glenn Taylor does not even go on, wait for it, 1 year. Forget 5 years, forget 10 years. Wait to see when we tell you something's going to happen. If it does, great. If not, fine. The fight between A-Rod, Mark, and Glenn will not even go on 1 year because Adam Silver, the commissioner, will not permit this. There is a contract, and you've got people on the internet telling you, look at this clause. They didn't violate anything, and they show you two sentences of a multi-100-page document. Well, in that case, have you ever seen a legal contract? You've got to look at part four as it relates to section 3, Gimel, paragraph A, sentence 2. You have to look at a contract in totality to understand each of the individual provisions. But don't worry, A-Rod had it perfectly right. He said, it's now personal. And Glenn said, see you later. It's just business.